Coffin Scarcely Used by Colin Watson. Dramatized for radio by Brian Wright. With Peter Jeffrey as Detective Inspector Pirbright.
Forasmuch as it both pleased Almighty God of his great mercy to take unto himself the soul of our dear brother, Harold Arthur, here departed, we therefore commit his body to the ground.
Sir, I'm convinced we can turn up evidence of fraud at Carabeek and Spade Limited.
I hesitate to overrule you, Pirbright, I really do. But now Harold Carabeek is dead and buried, I think we ought to drop this investigation.
Yes, with the owner dead, his widow pleading complete ignorance, and the firm's books gone missing, it's not promising, I admit.
What I do know is you could stir up a lot of unpleasantness and still get nowhere. Carabeek was a counsellor, J.P., sponsor of good causes, fine war work in the docks, all there.
But this is 1956, not 46. V.E. Day was 11 years ago, sir.
I'm sorry, my mind is made up.
Your decision, sir, of course. Excuse me.
Inspector Pirbright.
Yes, Sergeant?
Seen the Flaxborough Citizen. They've given Holy Harry a great send-off.
Holy Harry?
Harold Carabeek, that's his nickname down the docks, on account of his purge of the red light district, you know. Listen to what it says here.
Sergeant Love, as of now, the Carabeek case is closed by order of Chief Constable Sharp.
Oh, sorry to hear that, sir.
Yeah.
This will be Holy Harry's epitaph, then. Respected citizen. Successful director of ship's brokers, blah, blah. Passionate concern for moral welfare. Who writes this stuff?
The proprietor of the Citizen, I expect, Marcus Gwill, who just happens to be Carabeek's next-door neighbour and chum.
Oh, like that, eh? Carabeek and Gwill, all boys together.
There he is, Constable. That's exactly where I found him, right under the pylon. Stone cold dead.
What time was that?
Oh, on my way back to the farm, about 20 minutes ago.
It's Mr. Gwill. Mr. Gwill. He lives down at the Aspens. Big house down on Heston Lane. Poor old Mr. Gwill.
Blow me a kiss from across the room. Say I look nice when I'm not. Touch my
Oh, yes?
Good day. I'm P.C. Wilkinson. May I come in for a moment?
Oh, Mr. Gwill ain't here, I'm afraid.
I know, Mrs. Poole. It's him I've come about. I'm sorry, he's had an accident.
Accident? Oh, come in, come in. I knew something was wrong. The door wasn't locked when I came back this morning. I've been over to my sister's for the night, you see, and his bed weren't slept in neither. I knew I shouldn't have left him alone last night. Oh, excuse me, I'll just turn this off. What happened?
I'm afraid Mr. Gwill is dead.
Oh, I shouldn't have left him. I shouldn't.
Now, don't upset yourself, Mrs. Poole. Would you happen to know the name of your employer's next of kin? I need to make a phone call.
I'm sorry to bother you at your place of work, Mr. Lintz, but I have to inform you that we'll require a formal identification of your uncle's body later today.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, Inspector.
As editor of the Citizen, I suppose you saw quite a lot of each other.
Every day, usually.
You see, what I'm looking for, Mr. Lintz, is an explanation of why your uncle, Mr. Marcus Gwill, went out last night. He fancied a little walk across the fields, do you imagine?
In his slippers? In December?
Yes, that is curious, isn't it?
In here, Inspector. Please, take a seat.
Yes, thank you. If I had occasion to walk down the drive of the Aspens and cross Heston Lane and then climb a railing and go 20 yards over a field before apparently clambering up an electricity pylon, I really believe I'd put my boots on first. Still, gentlemen can do rather eccentric things when the mood takes them.
My uncle was not an eccentric. He managed to make too much money for that.
I imagine you'll have no cause to regret his good business sense.
Ah, I suppose I am his heir. I really haven't thought about the will.
Of course not. When was it you last saw your uncle alive, Mr. Lynch?
About 6 o'clock. I drove him back to Heston Lane.
How did he strike you then?
Same as usual. I didn't notice anything wrong.
Had he been depressed or worried?
If he had, he didn't confide in me. Well, things run pretty smoothly here.
No bereavements of any kind, relatives or friends?
Not that I know of.
His neighbour, Mr. Carrowbleat, died about 6 months ago. Were they at all friendly?
They were neighbourly, I believe.
Nothing beyond that?
I really don't know, Inspector. Mr. Carrowbleat's widow still lives next door. You could ask her.
Yes. Do you think your Uncle Marcus's housekeeper might be of some help?
No, I doubt it. She's not very bright, and she dabbles in spiritualism. She's convinced that the house is haunted.
Spooky place, Sarge, you've got to admit. Mm. Oh, I'm bloody cold, too. Anything else?
We ought to measure the height of that cable arm.
Climb up like old Gwill.
Let's call it 25 feet, shall we? No, 27. Yeah. That'll sound as if we really know. Afternoon, sir.
Afternoon, Sid. Nothing doing round here?
What had you in mind, sir?
Cloth fibres, nail fairings, you know.
Detective Constable Harper here found a couple of marshmallows.
Marshmallows?
Mr. Gwill had a bag of them in his pocket, sir.
Oh, we're about finished.
Oh, fine. I'm on my way down to the house. Doesn't look too inviting a place, does it?
Probably explains its reputation. Harpy's just been telling me. Funny old Gwill believe in it, though.
How do you mean?
Oh, country gossip, sir. Some of the locals have had the notion for a while now that there was a ghost lurking about outside Gwill's house. Oh? Well, it sounds daft, and I wouldn't repeat it, but a cousin of mine happened to be cycling back from town just before 12 last night, and he saw Mr. Gwill splashing water about on the ground from a big can or something. Just inside those big raw iron gates. Oh, it was dark, mind you. But he was pretty sure that's what he was doing.
And what did your cousin make of that?
Well, sounds silly, but holy water. Some sort of ritual, he thought.
Poor Mr. Gwill was being pestered, sir. And that's the top and bottom of it.
Pestered? By whom, Mrs. Poole?
Well, no one you could lay your hands on, sir. But there are such things. Although they took a bit of understanding.
Well, how did this pestering affect Mr. Gwill?
He was very unsettled, sir. And he'd always been a quiet sort. Dignified, you know.
Yes.
So, it showed.
When did you first notice this influence?
Oh, I can tell you to the day. It all started a month after Mr. Carrowbleat, next door, was put in his grave.
I understand they were friends.
Oh, please, sir. I don't want to talk about it any more.
What is it you're frightened of, Mrs. Poole?
Well, nothing. Not now. I think it's over. But I don't want to talk about it.
Tell me, did Mr. Gwill have any regular visitors of an evening?
Well, only the people you'd expect. Mr. Lintz sometimes, but not for meals. Dr. Hilliard, his doctor, came.
Was Mr. Gwill having treatment?
No, not as far as I know. The doctor came to dinner, usually.
Aye.
And Mr. Gloss, occasionally, the solicitor gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'd serve for him, the doctor, and, yes, Mr. Bradlaugh, the builder, and, you know.
Undertaker, yes, I know. So those three gentlemen were personal as well as professional friends. Mr. Bradlaugh, Dr. Hilliard, and...
Mr. Gloss. Yes, sir.
Yes. I wonder if you mind very much by taking a quick look round the house.
You're the police. You're welcome to say what you've a mind to.
Mr. Gloss, I'm astounded. I really am. If you have reason to suspect that a crime has been committed, your duty is to help the police in whatever way you can.
My dear Chief Constable, that is just the point. The situation is such that I can give precious little information. That is why I've taken the liberty of calling on you privately at your home. As a solicitor, I am perfectly well aware of what citizens are supposed to do, and how seldom they do it, and how little the police can do to make them.
Look here, sir, let's not beat about the bush. My lunch is waiting. You suppose Marcus Gwill to have been murdered, is that it?
It is.
Oh, but that's absurd.
I am Mr. Gwill's solicitor. Surely it carries some weight. I tell you that he was not without enemies.
Few of us are.
I might also add, my motives for approaching you are not entirely altruistic. You see, I am not confident that my own safety is henceforth assured.
Look now, Mr. Gloss, why don't you tell me what this is all about? Who exactly is threatening you?
Please believe me when I say it is no one against whom you could possibly take direct action.
Mr. Gwill's study.
Yes, not what you might call a cosy room.
Her next door seems to think so.
Ah, Mrs. Carrobleat was also a friend.
I can't say. She visited once a week, and not for dinner.
Well, if she came in here, perhaps it was partly for business reasons.
I don't know why she came. I kept out of the way.
Yes, well, I'll ask her myself.
You won't find her in. She went off in a taxi yesterday morning.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Poole.
Well, that's mostly newspaper stuff there.
Yes, what are all these?
You look like adverts from the Citizen.
Yes, I know. Was Mr. Gwill interested in buying and selling antique furniture?
Not specially.
That's very odd.
Will they be bringing him home, sir?
Not if you don't want that. And certainly not today. A post-mortem examination has to be made.
Here's the post-mortem report, Sarge.
Thanks, Wilkes. Yeah, you're good on the local knobs. What do you know about old Gwill?
Kept very much to himself. Nobody liked him much.
Time of death, 12:10. Just after midnight. It's got to be ghosts. Dear old Lord.
What?
Left palm exhibited a transverse burn 3/4 inch wide and 3 inches long. On palm of right hand, a burn mark, star or flower shape. Clearly defined, approximately 2.5 inches in diameter.
What have you got there, Sergeant?
Autopsy results, sir. Any news on the Heston Lane ghostie?
I wouldn't write him off yet. I don't go, Wilt.
Let me see that report.
Sir, P.C. Wilkinson was just saying nobody liked Gwill.
I do like a big field of suspects.
You're not saying it's murder.
Well, if I had any doubt, this bit here about the marshmallows would convince me. Teeth caked with the stuff, apparently.
Sir, the report confirms he was electrocuted.
Yes, he was, but I've never encountered a suicide who's been in the mood for confectionery at the last moment. And I've yet to find a man of Gwill's age who can clamber up pylons in the middle of the night with his mouth full of sticky marshmallows. No injury or mark on body apart from burns. Well, how the hell could he have fallen then?
But he had to be up there, or he couldn't have been electrocuted.
I wonder. Tell me, do the electricity board decorate their pylons with ornamental stars or flowers these days?
Not that I know.
Oh,
see what you mean? The burn mark on the right palm.
Yeah.
But where, if not at the pylon?
Well, first find your star or flower-shaped electrode. You better ask Forensic for a photograph of those burns.
See.
Can't have been far from Grill's house. He was in his slippers. And he was seen alive just before 12 by Harper's cousin.
Baptising his driveway against spirits.
Do what? Never mind the eccentricities for a moment, Sid. Let's start from the sound assumption that people seldom get themselves murdered by complete strangers. Wilkes, I want you and Harper on the knocker down Heston Lane this afternoon.
Right, sir.
And gently, Nugget, this is Flaxborough, not Chicago, Illinois.
Flaxborough isn't designed to cope with murder. Any more than that municipal building is designed to cope with earthquakes. This crime is out of context. For one thing, it's cleverness. Gwill wasn't forced to grasp whatever electrocuted him. He suspected nothing. Was his murderer a friend or a relative? He seems to have had an almost Edwardian penchant for entertaining professionals. He was the client of one guest, the patient of another, the potential customer of the third.
No, there need be nothing sinister in the association, of course. Three well-to-do friends. Four, presumably, until Harold Carrabeat died. Oh, talk of the devil.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Carrabeat.
Oh, hello, Inspector.
I was hoping to have a word. You've been away.
Yes, I've just got back from Shropshire. Did you want to speak to me particularly? Oh, it's not that business about my husband's firm again.
No, not that. Where did you spend last night, Mrs. Carrabeat?
Oh, this is something new. May I ask why you want to know?
Your next-door neighbour was murdered last night.
Not Marcus. Murdered. Marcus?
Mr. Gwill, yes.
But that's extraordinary. Are you sure?
If I weren't sure, I'd scarcely be running round asking questions.
Oh, no, of course not. That was silly of me, but it came as such a surprise.
I fancy Mr. Gwill was surprised, too.
Oh, it's dreadful, isn't it? Dreadful.
I was wondering if you might have anything helpful to tell me.
I really can't see what you think I might know about it.
Where did you spend last night?
At the brink of discovery.
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. It's a geographical joke. The Brink of Discovery is a pub, a small hotel, rather, on the far side of Shrewsbury.
Would you happen to have the bill?
Oh, really, Inspector? Here.
Any particular reason for the visit?
I often go down there. The West Country used to be my home. I need a change occasionally from this marsh of a place.
Thank you. Rather expensive.
My husband left me adequately provided.
I suppose he did. What was the purpose of your weekly visits to Mr. Gwill?
Well, who says I... Oh, you've been talking to Prowler Poole. Well, I did pop in occasionally to keep him company.
The two of you didn't happen to share an interest in antique furniture.
What?
Never mind.
Ah, good afternoon to you, Mrs. Carrabeat.
Oh, hello, Rupert. Inspector, this is Dr. Hilliard, Inspector Purbright. But you possibly know each other already.
Only by reputation.
Yes, shocking, dear Inspector, shocking. You have been kept busy and out of mischief, lady, I trust?
I am at present being tactfully helpful to the police.
Excellent. Though tact is not always what helps policemen, surely. Discretion can be pursued too far. Yes, Inspector?
I'm sure your patient would not take anything too far.
My patient?
Oh, forgive me. It was the late Mr. Carrabeat who attended, not his wife, wasn't it?
Aye, God rest his soul.
It's God rest Marcus Gwill's soul now, Doctor.
Well, as to that, lady, this sentiment does you credit. It does indeed.
I gather you were a friend of Mr. Gwill's.
He was a patient of mine, and a very careful man.
He'd need to be.
You hear that for the wee buddy?
Oh, for heaven's sake, drop that only Scottishy, Rupert.
Well, I must be getting along. I'll come and see you sometime, if I may, Mrs. Carrabeat.
Of course.
Bye for now, Doctor.
You've got the devil of a nerve showing your face here today.
I don't follow you.
Oh, no? You'll not get away with this, my lovely. Tell that to who it may concern. You can?
I don't know what Flaxborough's coming to, Purbright. I blame it on the television. A murder on our hands, that's bad enough. But a professional man, a member of the country club, sitting in my own drawing room and begging me for police protection. Police protection?
You couldn't give it to him, of course.
Oh, of course not. That sort of thing isn't available on demand, just like that.
I've seen Gloss in court. He wouldn't frighten easily. I'll have a word with him later on, sir. If he really is nervous, he'll probably be more forthcoming after a night or two listening to creaking floorboards.
Damn it all, old Gwill wasn't the sort of fellow you expect to get murdered.
Why? Well, his nephew George Lintz has something to gain. And then there's a rather curious relationship between Gwill and the Carrabeat woman.
Good Lord, old Gwill, the world's gone mad.
You remember the Carrabeat affair, sir?
Now, you're not dragging that old case up.
It's rather dragged itself up. Carrabeat and Gwill, two friends and neighbours, local dignitaries, one dead while still under investigation, the other murdered in mysterious circumstances. Now they'll lie side by side in Heston Cemetery, just as they lived side by side in Heston Lane.
Shut the gate then, lad.
All right, nag.
What was he like in there?
Better. Got a cup of tea, though.
Oh, lucky devil. Got anything else?
A list of people who might have been at Gwill's place after midnight?
Don't talk wet.
These people all sink into a coma around 8.
Oh, no, Harpy. The nice lady just told me her daughter was out at a dance or something. And she was so scared she'd come back ruined. Every time she heard anyone coming from town, she popped down to the gate to see if it was the daughter.
Who exactly did she see?
Morris Hoylake on bicycle.
No, that's my cousin. Burbright knows already.
Girl in hurry wearing fur-trimmed coat. Dr. Hilliard, well-off man in trilby hat who visited Mr. Gwill regular. Lady with...
All right. I've got one old insomniac who remembers a black van driving by. Nearly ran over a pussy gal, so she says. Round about midnight. She thinks it came back towards town later.
Oh, to finish off the cat, obviously. How many hours is to do?
A dozen or so. Sexton Blake never did it like this.
I'm out to go wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back.
Still here, sir? What's that?
You tell me. It belonged to old Marcus.
An album. Funny sort of hobby. It's all furniture adverts.
Why? Well, ask our friend the editor. How'd you get on with Lynch's wife, by the way?
I, Gladys Lynch, am a married woman and 41 years of age. I reside with my husband George in a nice house and already have a cocktail cabinet, a free pass to the Odeon, 2 beautiful children and the telly. What kill old Uncle Marcus? Why should I? I was a land girl in the war.
Right. Now tell me what you said without meaning to.
One, she thinks the undertaker, Jonas Bradlaugh, did it. Mm-hmm. Two, she suspected Gwill of making money on the side.
How? Buying and selling antiques?
She hadn't a clue.
Any reason why she didn't like old Nab Bradlaugh?
Well, she said it was Gwill who didn't like him. Uncle once said something about fixing Nab Bradlaugh if he'd a mind to. Sounded like a threat.
When was this threat made?
Several months ago. But the remark stuck in her mind. It's a very narrow mind.
A murdering undertaker. Sounds too good to be true.
Ah, Mr. Bradlaugh, come in. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Good evening, Doctor.
You're not ill, I take it.
No, glad to see you.
Well, will you take a dram?
No, this whole damn thing will have to be dropped for the time being, Doc.
It cannot and needn't be. Get that into your head, Bradlaugh.
We can build it up later when the fuss has died down.
What's running smoothly now will have to be kept running or abandoned altogether. And I'll not see that happen after what we've put into it.
But the police.
The police. And what will they do? Run round in ever-decreasing circles until they become their own colonic stoppages. Provided that you and I and Roddy Gloss remain helpfully obscure and unproductively cooperative, the police can do nothing.
Roddy Gloss is just a shade too clever sometimes. Keeping up with him can be dodgy.
Ah, stop frightening yourself, Bradlaugh. Marcus asked for what he got. My God, he did, but it can't be left at that. The police aren't the problem.
Eh?
There's a certain person we need to find, and quickly. Look, there's only one way to do it. A patient of mine, one of the more grateful ones, she works at the telephone exchange and is in the right place.
Flaxper 241? Oh, darling, I'm glad you rang. Something terrible's happened here, though it may have its... You know? How? Well, it's not in the national papers yet, is it? What? Yes. That Inspector Purbright has spoken to me. He's seeing me again sometime. Oh, no, of course not. I'll act the coquette, though the very idea makes me... Ugh. Oh, yes, I miss you too. But we'd better not visit for a while. It's not safe. Shall I get in touch with them? Hilliard's been making innuendos. No, all right. They are innuendos, darling, aren't they? Darling? Darling.
Here. This statement should save time for both of us, Inspector.
Very thoughtful of you, Mr. Lynch.
Yes, this is all rather terrible. I felt sure it was suicide. You will find that I managed to spend all last night in the company of witnesses, I'm glad to say.
Yeah, so I see. I can't imagine any more respectable midnight occupation than playing chess with an undertaker. Perhaps if you just sign this, sir.
Mm. Now, it's press day tomorrow, and I'm very busy, as you can see. There are no more questions, I presume?
Only this, sir.
This? It's my uncle's, isn't it?
Yes, an album of small ads. Doesn't make much sense to us.
No. Matter of fact, I've been rather puzzled about these myself. I came across them some months ago.
Is there anything peculiar about the adverts themselves?
Well, not exactly commoner garden offers. Antiques aren't in my line.
Were they in Mr. Gwill's?
Not to my knowledge. That's what puzzled me. Look, we'd better have young House up here. He handles the advertising. Incidentally, this week's edition, can my reporter include an official police statement in his account of Uncle's death? Oh, House, can you spare a moment?
Your paper can use all the facts as you know them, Mr. Lynch. But I'd like you to add this, though. Say the police are anxious to hear from anyone who was out in the Heston Lane area on Monday night after 11:30. We'd also like a word with the driver of a black van. Went up from town just before 12, returned about half an hour later.
Right, I'll make a note of that. Ah, House, this is Inspector Furbright.
Evening, sir.
It's to do with Mr. Gwill.
Sir?
Can you identify the small ads in this album?
These? They're all for sale that Mr. Gwill brought in himself. None of the ordinary ads have letters as well as figures in the box references. We used to sort out the replies and put them directly through to the boss.
Were those his instructions?
They were. There's four new ones for this edition. He gave them in before...
Yes, quite. Similar sorts of antique items?
Identical, now you come to mention it. Antique lampstands, a tankard, sideboards.
Why do you suppose Mr. Gwill was putting these adverts in the paper? Did you never wonder?
Well, I thought perhaps he had a friend in the second-hand trade.
You've no idea who this other person might have been?
No.
And I presume you never saw the replies?
Me? No. Mr. Gwill never left them lying about.
I'd be obliged if you and Mr. Lynch would make certain all the replies from the new adverts are given direct to me.
Sir.
As you wish.
Don't allow them out of your hands. I think that may be important. Telephone me as soon as anything arrives. And now I'll let you put your paper to bed and away to mine.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The inquest has been postponed, I take it?
Yes, but you can go ahead with the funeral arrangements now.
I've already spoken to Mr. Bradlaugh.
Yes, I expect you have.